All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart-loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight, and let's go.
Here we go! Monday, June 1st, 2026. Thank you for downloading Solo Show for the birthday boy today. That's right, old El Baldo hits 58 on the nose. Thank you in advance to everyone who is going to no doubt send me an email or a tweet or a text. I'm not going to respond to everybody. I'm not going to fight it either by being, you know, one of these dudes who are like, it's just my birthday. Doesn't matter. I mean, it does. It's another year around the planet, and grateful to be here every single day. Feeling good. Feeling good. Down from a stuffed bratwurst in a golf shirt, 245 pounds, to a feeling and looking far better, 213 and a half. Not that I am counting every little nudge of the slider on the doctor's scale in the bathroom in the basement. Goal is to get 200, and then I'll start lifting weight. Pump you up. Blood sugar average is 116. A1C is 5.7. Bad cholesterol trending down, good cholesterol trending up. RA seems to be under control, possibly in remission. Golf swing has never been better. My swing has never been better. My driver has never been better. Chipping is still a disaster, and the putting is hit or miss, especially on short ones. But hey, the summer is young, so let's go have ourselves a summer. The weather's been gorgeous this past 5 days in the DMV, and I've taken full advantage of it, and I'm going to do so again this week when it is expected to remain gorgeous. Today being Sunday, I wasted a beautiful day of weather because I had played golf for the 3 days prior, and I felt like, okay, time to take a day off. I'd already cut the lawn as well, so I went to go see the movie The Breadwinner with Nate Bargatze. My daughter, Catherine, was keen on seeing it, even though it's not an animated movie, which is normally her thing. And so I wanted to get more into going to see, you know, live action films. She kind of says, no, I don't like to do that. I just like to watch, you know, the animated stuff. I'm like, Catherine, you might like this one. So I went to see it, and my review is, it's bad. It's just not. Somehow the writers made Nate Bargatze not funny. Like, that's stunning right there. Mandy Moore, though, she is good looking. I don't need to tell you that, do I? High cheekbones, beautiful, sultry brown eyes, maturing quite nicely in her early middle age. But overall, you know, it was not good. But hey, killed a couple hours doing that. And then I just did a little bit of yard work around the property. And then I lingered. I lingered on the porch as the sun went down. I turned on the sprinkler. I cut the lawn, the little flat part of my lawn right beyond the porch, just because it needed a little trim and trim. Took me 20 minutes. And I turned on the sprinklers. I just watched the sprinklers as the sun went down. It was a cloudless, amazing day. And it's the kind of day, it was the day where there's still no bugs out yet. There was no humidity at all. Temperatures in the high 70s. So warm, but not at all hot. I mean, it was like the perfect day. And it's all downhill from here for the rest of the summer. But hey, I enjoyed it while I had it. Saturday night, game 7 goes to the San Antonio Spurs. The king is dead. The king is dead. The champs are out. And it was a fourth quarter barrage from deep by San Antonio that did in OKC. You hate to see it if you are sick of the Thunder and their unethical basketball, as it's called. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, let's praise the Spurs. They are young, they are deep, and they are going to be a problem for years to come. Some headlines said Spurs, Wemby arrive at NBA Finals ahead of schedule. And I'm like, ahead of schedule? Why not now? I don't know what the schedule is. The big three for San Antonio now, Wemby, Castle, and Harper. Dylan Harper is a freaking stud, which makes you wonder, how on earth did Rutgers not even break an egg with both Harper and Ace Bailey together? I remember when all the mocks were saying, yeah, it looks like these two guys from Rutgers are going to go both in the lottery. I'm like, really? They're that good? What? Why then does Rutgers suck, relatively speaking? Anyhow, the big three of Wemby, Castle, and Harper are going to be a huge problem for years to come. Now, don't expect the Thunder to just sit there and do nothing. First of all, they've got a second apron problem. I love that term, the second apron. Sounds so domesticated. They're way over the cap, but they're going to clear that by not tendering Dort and Hartenstein. And then they've got picks to fling around in trades, and they're going to come after Giannis big time. The pairing of SGA and Giannis seemingly is one that has to be made. Now, it's got to have Giannis' sign-off on it, even though he doesn't have a no-trade clause. You don't want a guy who says, no, don't send me there. Seems like Giannis' preferred spot would be Miami. They could be in the mix for him. You got the LeBron situation that's going to be brewing this summer as well. You got potentially disgruntled big men already in new cities like Anthony Davis in Washington, who's already kind of hinting like, I don't know. We'll see what they got going here. He could be on the move. It's going to be a fun hot stove league, but let's not worry about that yet. Let's look at the finals. The Spurs and the Knicks run it back from 1999. Run it back from the NBA Cup, in which the Knicks beat the Spurs. So the Spurs are playing in NBA Cup revenge mode as the heavy, but not overwhelming favorite. San Antonio minus 205. New York is plus 170. Finals begin on Wednesday on ABC at 8:30 in the East. Stanley Cup final starts Tuesday on ABC as well, 8 o'clock, Vegas, Carolina. Carolina dismissed Montreal rudely on Friday night. Just a humiliation for the second straight night. It was just bad. Carolina is a significant favorite. Not heavy, because it is hockey, but minus 155 Carolina. Vegas is plus 125. And so we're down to it. So Sunday night, where I'm taping this now, and Monday night are going to be two nights in which we don't have any football, basketball, or hockey on television at night of any shape, sort, variety, stripe, color, or flavor. Since August, I believe August. If you're really, there's probably some nights, Tuesday nights in September, we don't have any of that before the NBA and NHL gets ramped up. But it's like, you know, we're getting down to the end of it, which is okay. I kind of felt relieved. I didn't mind lingering and watching the sprinkler as if it needs to be watched because there was no game on that I was missing. I'm like, this is sweet. The weather's great. I'm just going to watch the lawn get watered. But that's kind of an indication of, well, here we go. We're into the summer now. But Game 7 was big boy basketball. Whew. It was some tough stuff. And afterwards, Wemby's emotions showed you just how much it matters to him. It's because Wemby's not American. He looks at the sport and at the league in a way that a boy from another country across the ocean there would look at the NBA as something like, man, I hope I can make it to the NBA. I hope I can make it. This is my dream someday to play in the NBA and to win the title. It's different than if you're a early onset identified boy, young man in America who's in the AAU programs. I would imagine a lot of those guys think that, of course I'm going to be in the league. Why wouldn't I be? But Wemby had a rough series. He had a game or two in which you're like, okay, why isn't he playing near the basket? What happened to that dominant game one? Have the Spurs or have the Thunder figured him out in terms of playing him? He also told a couple of his goons to go make some hard fouls at the end of the game. That was kind of a lip reader special on that, even though he tried to hide his hand. And he also dodged the media one game and got a warning, a rebuke from the league saying, you can't do that. You got to talk to the media. Was a bit up and down for the series, but Wemby and the Spurs delivered when it mattered. Like I said, late threes from a bunch of guys up and down the roster, which, again, is part of why the Spurs are so good, is they just have guys. So, you know, we're talking couple threes from Keldon Johnson. Had a three from Wemby, had a three from Harper. Forget who else hit one in that fourth quarter. But yeah, Spurs get it done. Thunder are out. And Chet Holmgren, woof. Talk about a bad game seven. 4 points, two field goal attempts, two turnovers, and otherwise four rebounds and getting posterized by Wemby on a dunk. It's better to challenge a dunk because you never know. You might block it or clean or get a foul and stop an easy dunk. But, man, when you try to block a dunk from a dude in the NBA and he just goes right through you and puts you on a poster, this still picture I'm looking at of Wemby dunking on Chet, Jesus. So there's going to be a Chet Holmgren problem or dilemma of sorts for the Thunder. They're going to probably try to package him in trades. We'll get to that in a second. But as far as the game itself, you know, the Spurs with that fourth quarter hammer close, the threes really mattered. And SGA, despite having his best game of the series, still did a lot of the stuff that makes people hate Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, including that step back three after a pump fake on the left wing. Shot clock is winding down under six seconds left on the shot clock, which is when you really shouldn't bail guys out. And he pump fakes Vassell into the air, which Vassell knows he shouldn't fall for it, but these guys do. They have to. He sells it very well. But Vassell's smart. He jumps in a way that is like a 45-degree angle so that he thinks he's going to fly past SGA if it happens to be a pump fake and not a shot. Well, SGA then pulls the ball down on the pump, sees that Vassell is sailing past him to his left, and then makes the most exaggerated jump left and backwards into a passing Vassell. And they call a foul. He, of course, fell down for good effect on top of it. This has got to be fixed. The refs didn't call all of these in the game because there was another one in which Caruso, bringing the ball up the court, could tell he was being pressured a bit and decided he was going to wrap his offhand, his off arm, around the waist of the defender. And then as soon as there was enough contact, he would just fall to the ground, which he did. He threw himself down hard to the ground. The ball bounced out of bounds. Looked like it must have been a foul in real time. Everything's happening so quick. And then you see the replay, and you're like, oh, I see what you did there. You're the one who actually grabbed the defender, and then you just kicked your legs out from under you as you decided, I just want to draw a foul. Nick Wright made a good point about this on First Things First. I think I talked about it Friday. Don't quote me if I did. I did a weekend shift on JFK. I talked about it there, and I'm going to talk about it again here. He said, look, this is being coached by the Thunder. There's no reason why they wouldn't coach and perfect and gamify everything in order to win. It's only smart. If the refs are going to call it when you do this stuff, then you should do more of this stuff if it doesn't hurt your team. Now, there's a small disadvantage when you do fall down and don't get a call because it takes a little while to get up and the other team can run and possibly have numbers without you. But I think that's a small price to pay if you end up going to the line 16 times in a game. And if you're getting calls so much that the other team is afraid to guard you and you're getting open jumper after open jumper after open jumper. But it's got to be addressed because it's just, it's a terrible image for the league and guys have gotten too good at figuring out how to game the refs. But the Thunder are not going anywhere. If they get Giannis, it'll probably be unfair if Giannis is healthy with him and SGA. And these two heavyweights are going to battle hard for years to come. It will mark, however, with the Spurs and Knicks in the NBA Finals, the 8th different champion the league has had in a row. It's widely perceived the NBA is the league in which if you get a superstar or two, then you're going to be in the finals every year. It's best of seven. You tend to get more calls at home in a best of seven in basketball than you do in football or baseball, where the referees aren't as big of a factor. But the league with the most parity right now, shockingly, is the NBA. Walking backwards, it'll either be the Spurs or the Knicks this year for the championship. And then the Thunder, Celtics, Nuggets, Warriors, Bucks, Lakers, Raptors are your previous seven walking backwards in time. Of course, part of getting good is getting a generational player in Wemby. No, I'd say he's a once every 50-year player. But they also had drafted well elsewhere. Here's the sequence of picks by the Spurs to get here. They picked Keldon with pick 29. They picked Vassell with 11 in 2020. Wemby went 1-1. Castle went 1/4. Harper went 1/2. And then they took Bryant this year at 1/14. So they are cooking with their picks in San Antonio and not just the top ones. Also, it should be noted on a perception front that, oh my God, it's a home game in the NBA, game seven. Game seven at home, it's a lock for the home team. Well, past 6 years, home teams are 9-12 in game sevens, 42.8% win rate. Prior to 2020, do you know what the home win rate was in game sevens? 42.8% since 2020. The rate before 2020, 78.5%. Home teams in game seven were 106-29. Why the change? How the change? What can you attribute to the change? Adam Silver's been in office a lot longer than 2020. Don't make me look up when he actually, you know, got in there, but still. So I think I've dealt with all that. The broadcast. Look, I'm a Tirico stan. Not just a Tirico fan. I'm a Tirico stan. I love him. He did a great job, as I knew he would. I'll reiterate one of my criticisms, mild criticisms from earlier, and that is he seems to want to inject more narrative into the fast pace of basketball than is allowable, given that it's not football with stoppages every play. So, and penalties and injuries. So he probably needs to dial that in just a bit. Reggie Miller can be really, really good. Speaks very plainly, straightforward. His voice cuts through. It's a familiar voice. He's got a good sense of humor, loves the league, doesn't shit on it, but will call things the way he sees them. Now, I think Jamal Crawford is still struggling to figure out his role, his place, and for whatever reason, his voice doesn't pop, for lack of a better term, when I'm listening to the games. But for the first year, pretty good. The studio show, I saw an article that said the NBC's studio show for the NBA needs a total revamp. I just kept scrolling. I don't have time to care about studio shows. Pre, post, halftime, I'm making a sandwich. Don't need to worry about those. The actual game broadcast has been good. Roundball Rock, good to have you back. Tip of the cap to you, Mr. John Tesh. Oh, and Jordan. Remember, Jordan was going to be a contributor this year to the NBA on NBC? Well, yeah, he was. He gave one sit-down interview, and that was that. They paid him $5 million. And he's like, I'll give you one. You sure? I think there's guys at NBC going, you got to call Jordan and ask if he can do something with us for the Western Conference Finals. It's our last series before we hand it over to ABC. Maybe he'll do one pregame, maybe one more sit-down interview. Well, we'll go to his golf club. We'll interview him somewhere quiet in the clubhouse. Anything? Who wants to call Jordan? Keeps going to voicemail? Shit. In a way, I kind of respect it. Very gangster move by old 23. So it's on to the finals we go, and the prices for tickets, of course, are going to be insane. But that's because of all the rich New York douchebags that are going to buy tickets. The current cheapest get-in price, according to Darren Ravel, Game 1 in San Antonio, $2,021. That's nosebleed cheapest to get in currently at Tick Pick. That is only one reseller. You may want to check others. Get-in price for Game 1, $2,000 and change. Get-in price for the first game in New York, $4,201. And nobody's going to see you at the game. Nobody's going to believe you went to the game if you're in the rafters at Madison Square Garden, but that's what it's going to cost. Somebody did the math and said you'd be better off just flying down to San Antonio, staying at the nicest hotel in town, but you wouldn't be amongst other sideways, mouth-breathing, douchebag Knicks fans, which is kind of the point of being there. I saw some theater had a watch party for Knicks fans where they put the game up on the big IMAX screen. Well, maybe not IMAX, but the big theater screen. $10. I think that looks every bit as fun as going to the game. You're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting the TV presentation with all the replays and all the close-ups and the announcers and all the stuff that goes with it. And you're getting to be around other like-minded fans to high-five them, to meet new friends, to talk some shit. I mean, concessions obviously going to be very expensive, a lot more than the beers will cost in your fridge, and I'm not sure if the movie theater allowed alcohol, but still. For $10 versus $4,000, yeah, that's an easy call right there. Also, the NBA Finals courts will have painted on Larry O'Brien trophies prominent in the center jump circle. You remember a couple years ago, they decided to remove the actual painted logos because, man, we could save some money. Save some money, save some time. So they went digital. They put a fake-ass logo on the court and then piped it to TV and said, there, that's good enough. And people were rightfully pissed. It was cheap, stupid, unnecessary. So the painted logos are back. Now, one more thing about the series. Allegedly, a bettor had $1.7 million or bust riding on the Spurs winning outright against the Thunder in Game 7. He had a four-leg parlay on some long-shot futures, starting with USA to win the Olympic gold medal in hockey. Ding, that was plus 150. Michigan winning the NCAA basketball tournament. Ding, plus 500. And then the Knicks to make the finals, which I think was in the plus 500 range, and the Spurs to make the finals out west in the plus 850 range. Add them all up, his $2,500 parlay was due to pay out $1.7 million, but DraftKings, who held the ticket, said he could buy out of it and get $612,000, which I would have done in a heartbeat. But then again, I don't have $2,500 to wager on four-leg futures parlays that are all long shots. So they interviewed this guy, this alleged bettor, and I say alleged because, like, there's no court of law that proves if these guys are real or not. I'm not running DraftKings software. I can't verify and double-check the ticket. But this is the guy, supposedly, who is now $1.7 million richer because he denied the buyout. He said, I'm letting it ride with the Spurs. This is called gambling.
What's up, guys? We are here with the Parlay Prince coming into Game 7. $1.7 million comes down to one basketball game. The cash out is set at $612,000 right now. As far as I know, you're not taking it, man. Tell me why.
I mean, Tanner, I said, I saw a better team yesterday in Game 6. I was there. It was absolutely an electric atmosphere. And I was thinking that the cash out would be closer to $1 million. Being that DraftKings set it at $612,000, I think that's fairly low for a one-game winner-take-all. You know, at $1 million, I was considering taking the money, cashing out, and doubling down half of that on the Spurs money line tomorrow. But being that they didn't give that, it's just fate. And we got to believe, we got to keep believing. It's just one more game, as I keep saying. And we're going to let it ride. $612,000 is a lot of money, but it's not something I'm willing to cash out.
Now, a lot of people in the comments are saying, oh, he's definitely hedged already. Have you done that? And there are any plans to hedge or no?
There was never a plan to hedge. Just as a sports bettor, I mean, I see where it makes sense at times. But like I said in the beginning and since the beginning, I don't just bet with my brain. I also, you know, bet with my gut, bet with my heart. And I could just never, ever bet on the favorite, you know, flopping Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm an underdog bettor. I like the underdog. I like the story. I like the, you know, I like the David versus Goliath. And I think that's what we have here. The young, the mighty, the resilient rookies, the young players of the Spurs. And my heart would just never let me side with the Thunder, even if it's for financial gain. I mean, I'm a Spurs guy. I love the Spurs. Like I said, these guys are great. Aside from just basketball players, they just seem like great character guys. And that's a team that I want to be behind, and I am behind, and I stand behind them. So one more win. Let's go Spurs.
All right. So this guy, he looks like a not yet 40-year-old, obviously New York accent. And yeah, sure, he could be a really rich douchebag hedge fund trader or private equity guy. So $2,500 on parlays like this is no big deal. He's been laying them and throwing them in there for years. That he could look at a guaranteed $600,000 and sniff at it, saying it's not a fair price, I want more. It's possible, I guess. But something about how polished he was in his delivery and his rationale. And he just looks too clean. Thin beard, great hair, decent smile. It doesn't smell right to me. But if you know of a story that proves that this guy is actually real and has some other information about his betting history, I'd love to see that. Because I just always wondered, is it illegal to put forth fictional bettors with fictional bets to prompt more people to play? I would hope it is illegal, but I don't know. I know this. One place that is not fishy at all to put your money down if you want to make a bad wager like a parlay, which are sucker bets, it is mybookie.com. Use promo code ZABE. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. Square deals, quick payouts. It's the sports book that I've been affiliated with for as long as this podcast has been going. So almost 8 full years now. And I love them, and I think you'll enjoy it as well. But bet responsibly, of course. And if you want to throw a parlay in for $5, fine. $5. $2,500? No. What are you thinking? Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good. Maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at mybookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. Mybookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Couple baseball things, and then some non-sports. The college baseball regionals are going on right now to determine who is going to go to the College World Series. I wish I knew the whole format better. I did dive in and try to figure out, okay, what's going on here? Who's in what regional? How's it working? Because there's a story that is hard to even believe, but it's about to maybe possibly happen. University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, UWM, the little school that could, has a baseball program. And because they're located right in downtown Milwaukee, in fact, when I used to have my one-bedroom monogamous apartment in the sky when I worked for 97.3 The Game, I would look down, I could see off just a couple blocks to the north, the UWM campus. I could see their baseball diamond, as a matter of fact. Knowing the weather there and knowing when baseball season starts in the spring for most teams around the country, hell, I bet their field has snow on it for half the year. Or not half the year, but it's got snow on it for a good chunk of the early part of the season. How they work around that, I don't know. But UWM just has to beat the winner of the double elimination game between Auburn and, UCF. They beat them both, and now they're waiting whoever comes out of that loser's part. This is why it's so complicated. It's like there's a double elimination. Then there's the super regional, which, you know, combines a couple. Then you finally get to the College World Series in Omaha, which I've been told is a wonderful event. College baseball's definitely been on the come up as of late. It's had a glow up. Some schools are definitely spending some money on it. But it's wild because you could have a great team and lose to a UWM. I mean, UWM shouldn't have beaten anybody. They started this year 5-22. Not kidding. On April 3rd, Milwaukee was 5-22 and one of the worst teams in the country. Not just 5-22, but they were getting drilled by everybody. 21-7 by LSU, 20-3 by Duke, 14-4 by Minnesota, 17-1 by Purdue, 16-2 by Notre Dame. I mean, these are football scores, for God's sakes. And yet, they found it. I think they're up to 26-31 now. But they're one win away from at least the Super Regional with a possible trip to the College World Series. One team that is not going to the College World Series is UCLA. UCLA had the most dominant team in college baseball all year long, and they just got bounced in the regionals by St. Mary's. A stunning loss for an iconic program that went 52-8 this year. That's baseball for you. That's baseball. In the bigs, it's been a hell of a month for a couple of electric arms. Jacob Mizorowski of the Brewers and Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies have put together a 9-0 month of May between the two of them, in which they have given up a combined one run. Absolutely incredible. They've both pitched almost 39 innings, and they're striking out everybody in sight. Miz is throwing 100, 102, 104 on the regular, 50-plus pitches in the game over the century mark. Sanchez, his ERA is zilch in 39 innings. He's 4-0 in May. 6'6", Sanchez is. Big boy. Mizorowski, also a big, tall, lanky fella. He went 5-0 in the month of May. The Brewers had a great May. Everything's heading toward a very exciting summer of baseball and a postseason. And we just had our first set of proposals by Major League Baseball and the Players Union. So the dance has begun. The dance with the lockout devil. The MLB owners are calling for a salary cap, which includes a salary floor, that they say will make the Players Union as a whole as strong financially as they have been, if not more so, because many teams will be forced to spend. I believe only 10 teams currently are in what would be the Goldilocks zone of being above the floor proposed by MLB and below the cap. But the mega agents, the Scott Borises of the world and the superstars, are going to hate it because they're not going to make as much money. So we shall see who wins out. I don't want a baseball strike or a lockout. There's so much good going on with the sport. The last thing we want is for this thing to end up getting off the rails and to have next year be a prolonged and ugly showdown. But many owners are saying, look, I can't compete with the Dodgers and their economics of what they've got going with their cable deal. Also, MLB has proposed pooling all of the media rights, including dumping the Yankees media rights, coffers, and the Dodgers into a big pot and chopping it up. That's a radical departure. I wonder what the Yankees and the Dodgers really think about it, but yeah, we'll see. Quick break when we come back to some non-sports stuff to finish off the cast today on my birthday. You are listening to the Zabecast. Okay, we're back. I guess this is sports. More media layoffs at otherwise venerable sports institutions. SI, Sports Illustrator, SI.com, just had a bunch of layoffs. They had spent a lot of money on this AI video service that apparently did not work. The one vertical that SI was still making money on was golf. Their best writer, Bob Herrig, sadly, part of those layoffs. Yahoo Sports parted ways with their best reporter, best writer, Charles Robinson, who's covered the NFL and other sports for over 20 years for Yahoo. He's also out. And no, I don't think it's going to be any better going forward. It just seems to be a melting ice cube in so many ways, and that's too bad. But hopefully those guys will find a spot somewhere, somehow. It's just kind of depressing to see. The Barstool Invitational is going to be back for next year. This is the internet golf tournament sponsored by Barstool and funded with a prize pool last time, the first one they had of like $1 million for a bunch of amateurs and characters and YouTube creators. And it was very popular. It was a hit. This year, Portnoy has found $4 million for the purse, which is insane given that that's more than many DP World Tour events. That's the same amount as many opposite field PGA Tour events. And it's a purse that is more than every purse on the LPGA. All for what? Fat Perez and Bob Does Sports and Frankie Butterknives. Frankie Butterknives, Trent. Ugh. Riggs, Paige Spiranak. I had many of my golf buddies say, I can't believe you didn't watch the Internet Invitational. It was really entertaining. You'd really like it. You should watch it. And I was like, all right, well, when I get to it, I'll give it a chance. Now is the time I got to get to it because, like I said before, we're running out of sports. But yeah, that's amazing. The money is where the eyeballs are. Also, Bryson DeChambeau said he turned around his round over the weekend on the LIV Tour. He fired a 565 on Sunday en route to a team victory for his crushers. He finished third, but he said he used Google's Gemini AI to help fix his swing. He said, I was slamming the club in the ground trying to figure out what to do. I was frustrated, been trying everything in my body, didn't actually figure it out on the range. I went back and started talking to Gemini to try to figure out what it could be to passively make the club turn over. Said that AI helped fix his game. Okay, buddy. Apparently, Google Gemini is really far behind in the AI race, that nobody's using it. I would think it's possible to feed AI video or feed AI video of your swing and say, what happened here? And I bet it could give you some advice, but it's still, you have to do it. You have to have the physical ability. You have to have the strength, the flexibility, the hand-eye coordination, the timing, the touch, everything. You can't just say, hey, AI, fix my swing. It's going to give you an answer like, why don't you stop three-putting so much? That'll lower your score. Thanks, Google Gemini. Thanks for nothing. Speaking of Google, why are they in the mosquito business? Headline, Google to release 5 billion mosquitoes across the state of Florida and the South. This apparently has been something that they have applied for a permit to do with the EPA, and it is part of the Alphabet Life Sciences arm via its debug project, not debugging code, but debugging bugs. Did I say 5 billion? I misspoke. 32 million mosquitoes they're going to release. These are male Culex mosquitoes infected with naturally occurring Wolbachia bacteria. This across parts of both Florida and California. Now, the males don't bite or spread disease. That's good. But the bacteria prevents their offspring from surviving, suppressing populations of mosquitoes that do carry West Nile virus, dengue plague, and similar illnesses. It's a formal biopesticide application under EPA review with public comments open until June 5th. So before anyone goes off the handle, what the hell is Google doing releasing mosquitoes? Well, they're doing it because if it works, it'll be for the better for society. Now, what happens when the population of mosquitoes collapses? I keep hearing about, bats eat up to 1,000 mosquitoes a day. Are the bats going to die? Then what happens to the whoever eats the bats? What happens to the precious ecosystem? My sense is it'll adjust. My sense is also that these mosquito eating numbers for bats and or purple marlins is wildly overrated and overestimated, but that could just be me. Dateline, the unfriendly skies. United Airlines 236 was heading from Newark to Palma de Mallorca, Spain the other night. And about an hour into the flight, just past Nova Scotia, over the Atlantic Ocean, they squawked back to the tower saying, we're going to turn around. There's a suspected bomb threat on board. Here's what happened. Somebody on board had a Bluetooth device that appeared on other people's phones as bomb. After notifying the crew and then the captain, and after the captain implored everybody, please turn off your Bluetooth on your phones, the one that was still on was the one that read bomb. So, out of an abundance of caution, and because they were only an hour over the ocean, they turned around. Turned out to be a 16-year-old boy who either as a joke or just, I don't know, stupidly had named his Bluetooth device bomb. What should be the punishment for this kid and or his family? He's a minor. Remember how dumb you were at 16. But I'm not sure what should be done. A one-year no-fly list kind of thing? I don't know. Also, if you really have a bomb that's going to be Bluetooth operated, you're not going to label it bomb. You're going to label it like United Airlines entertainment, something innocuous that would hide. Also, if you really have a bomb on board that can be detonated with Bluetooth, which means that you yourself, because Bluetooth only has a certain range, you yourself are going to die, then as soon as the plane turns around, you're going to know something's up and you're just going to go boop and we're done. So the turning around, I don't get it. Also, if you're halfway there, if you're literally halfway there, it would make no sense to me to turn around and fly home. It would suck, though. Imagine being deep into a flight somewhere. Like, nope, we're going to turn around, especially over water. We're going to turn around because we think there could be a bomb on board. Of course, the whole thing reminded me of the great scene from Meet the Parents. Bomb, 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 bomb.
Hey, you can't leave your vehicle unattended.
We're towing.
I've got a plane full of people saying you threatened that stewardess.
I was not threatening her. I was just trying to get my bag into the overhead storage thing.
You were acting like a maniac, and you threatened her with a bomb.
No, I said I didn't have a bomb.
You said bomb.
I said it's not like I have a bomb.
You said bomb on an airplane.
What's wrong with saying bomb on an airplane?
You can't say bomb on an airplane.
Bomb, bomb, bomb. Bomb, 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 bomb. Bomb, 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 bomb. You gonna arrest me?
You assaulted an airline employee.
What if I was in the military and I was a bombardier? Bomb, 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 bomb.
Yeah. What a pain in the ass that must have been. Finally, happy birthday, not just to me, but to the movie Fletch. Turned 41 years old on Sunday. Came out May 31st, 1985. And for some people, especially the younger generation, I think they see the movie or they see clips and they just are like, I don't get it. That's not funny. Why do you love this movie so much, Dad? And it's hard to describe why, other than the fact that 1985 for somebody my age was the sweet spot of life. You're a junior in high school. You're old enough to drive. You're not worried about college just yet because you're just a junior. You got hair, most likely. I had hair. Had a 32-inch waist. I mean, the days were long, the responsibilities were short, life was good. So a funny movie with Chevy Chase at his full peak of his dum-dum comedic power before he turned all fat and bitter, the lines are priceless.
Nugent. Ted Nugent.
John who?
John Cocktoe.
It's a beautiful name.
Well, it's Scotchermania. You know, if I did some sit-ups in the morning or bent over like this, I'd probably feel 100% back. Moon River. Whew. Thank you, Doc. You ever serve time?
Oh, it's me, Dr. Rosenpenis. I'm just here to check out Zamwick's file. Dr. Rosen, I'm here to get to the records room. It's Dr. Rosen.
Would you like some drinks, senor, while you wait? I will put it on the Underhill's bill.
Yes, very good. I'll have a Bloody Mary and a steak sandwich and a steak sandwich, please.
What kind of a name is Poon?
Comanche Indian.
Can I borrow your towel for a sec? My car just hit a water buffalo.
You own rubber gloves?
I rent them.
I'm afraid there is someone sitting next to you.
Oh, for God, Don. Who is it, Mr. Sinlinden?
Can I get you?
Sinlinden.
Yeah, do you have the Beatles White Album?
Who are you?
I'm Don Corleone, Mrs. Cavanaugh's cousin. Does this proposition entail my dressing up as Little Bo Peep?
You don't know the Underhills?
I'd appreciate the opportunity of discussing this matter with you.
I'm just out of the shower.
Can you wait a minute?
I just have to wee-wee. What
the hell you need ball bearings for?
Oh, come on,
come
guys.
Come on, guys.
It's so simple. Maybe you need a refresher course. Hey, it's all ball bearings nowadays.
Who are you again?
I'm Frida's boss.
Who's Frida?
My secretary. Many of you don't know that Fred was darn near death recently, and he wasn't ashamed to admit to me that he'd had syphilis and... Thank God he stopped in his tracks.
You're not recording this, are you?
No, never.
She looks like a hooker. Look at her. Look at her. Could you love someone who looked like that?
What are you talking about? Of course not. 5-10 minutes tops, maybe.
I had to go look up the actress who was an absolutely underrated dime. And her name is Dana Wheeler Nicholson, who played Gail Stanwyck. She's 65, still with us. Recent photos, looks not bad for 65. But yes, Dana Wheeler as Gail Stanwyck in the movie Fletch was an absolute low-key bullet. That'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. Please spread the word, rate, and review. As you know, it helps with the algorithmic overlords. Thank you for reaching out and saying happy birthday to me. Made it another year. Let's see if I can do another one in a row to make it to 59 next June 1st. Enjoy another night of nothing before the Stanley Cup Final and the NBA Finals begin on Tuesday and Wednesday. And we will see you next time. The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL, both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.